Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. With me today, I have former PhD student Colin Morris. Colin grew up in North Devon and lived there until the age of 18, when he decided to move to the Gansu province in China. At 19, Colin became an English teacher and continued to live in China until the age of 23. He did his undergraduate degree in Leeds before doing his postgraduate degree in anthropology at the LSE. In between his postgraduate degree and his PhD, Colin was a research assistant at the LSE and a brand strategist in Shanghai. Colin recently finished his PhD thesis, passing without any corrections. His title, Life Under Chai, Spatial Governmentality and Practices of Resistance in the Digital and Physical Spaces of Beijing, China. So welcome, Colin.
Hey there. And for reference, that chai is not tea. It means demolition in Chinese. I've given several presentations where people thought I was talking about tea for 15 minutes, and they really couldn't link up what I was talking about with their idea of tea. So yeah, chai is to demolish in Chinese.
That saves me later. I'm going to be honest. I was a bit confused when I was reading that, but
no, it happens a lot.
Yeah, I'm glad you cleared this. I'm glad it's not just me as well. But to kick off, as I mentioned, you grew up in North Devon. How would you describe the area to those who haven't been?
So Littleham is a village right on the edge of about a mile and a half away from Bideford town center. It's just really quite beautiful. As many geographers and social scientists will know, the UK has a real problem with coastal town deprivation and poverty. And that was an issue there. So whilst my dad was a funeral director, my father and my mother split up when I was 4. I went to live with my grandmother. Me and my mother also lived in a caravan for a while. But I could definitely feel the lack of opportunity around me in this really beautiful place. And I could see people moving to this place, rural gentrification, or at least town-based gentrification. I could see people coming to this beautiful place, but then I could also see that the people around me were finding it difficult to experience the beauty of that place. So I'd say it was aesthetically and landscape-wise very beautiful, but I always felt there was a sort of social ugliness and pressure there that nobody really knew how to cope with. I spoke to a photographer, Gareth Phillips. He's Welsh and he does some work in The Guardian and other publications. His uncle lives there, and he was chatting to his uncle, and he was chatting to his uncle's kid, he was telling me, and he just said his uncle's kid had no idea how he would live in the future, had no idea how he could move to other places in the country or in the world. And he also sort of told me about this sense of isolation growing up in this rural coastal community. So I don't know. I'm not selling it. Really beautiful, but for me growing up there as a kid, I could feel these sort of economic and social pressures and the deprivation and the isolation, although I didn't really have the language to describe it. What I will say is coastal, spent a lot of time surfing, and I lived next to a town area called Westward Ho, which is the only place in the UK with an exclamation mark in its name.
Fabulous. So we're now moving on to your first song. Can you tell me what it is and for any reasons why?
So my first song is something I think thinking through this is the first time I probably listened to it in 20 something years. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber, Superstar. So as a kid, CD player, my grandmother's kitchen, Andrew Lloyd Webber was one of the CDs that was always on the desk, and I put it on quite a lot. And whilst I'm not the biggest fan, I would say, of musical theater style music, there was this brilliant performativity and eccentricity to this music that, whilst it's not what I go to listen to now, I really like that eccentricity, theatricness, campness even to the music. And it does come through in some of the music I listen to now. I listen to a bit of metal, and one of the recent albums I've liked is by a metal musician called Devin Townsend, the album Empath. And that is full of this theatric craziness. And when I listen to Empath album by Devin Townsend, my mind often goes to this, to me being 6 years old, listening to Andrew Lloyd Webber Superstar and dancing around my grandmother's kitchen.
So people that know you know that you've got a fascination with China. Do you remember when your fascination first began?
I never really had a fascination with China as a kid. And now I'd say, yeah, I have a lot of friends in China. I've spent a lot of time in China. I would consider Xi'an, one of the cities I lived in, my second or third home. It's somewhere I would really comfortably stay for long periods of time and would like to live in again in the future. It's a place that parts of China are just places that are of my life that I care deeply about. But when I went to China, I was volunteering with a gap year charity called Project Trust. And I applied there because one of their people went to my school. And I saw the presentation. I was like, wow, I can get out of Devon through this. And the person who gave me this presentation went to Thailand. So my first choice was, I want to perhaps go to Thailand. And that was one of the places Project Trust did. My second choice was Japan. I was quite interested in Japanese culture at that period of my life. And it was somewhere that was about as far from Devon as I could imagine. So Japan was second choice. You had to choose three places. In between Thailand and Japan, as I saw the map, was China. It was really bloody big, and I knew nothing about it at all. So I chose China as my third choice. And I went from rural coastal Devon to living in Gansu province, which is on the edge of the Gobi Desert in the center of China, and often suffers droughts and sandstorms. So it was quite a different experience. From then, I just got more and more interested about society, contemporary Chinese culture as it evolves in the sort of post-communist period.
Oh, wow. I've got more questions about China, but first, can you tell me about the second song you're going to be taking with you?
So the second song, and this is, I'd say, the mid-teens when I was playing around and understanding music a bit more, is David Bowie, Heroes. So I wanted something that's David Bowie because seeing videos and images of David Bowie as Ziggy Stardust dressed in outlandish outfits, many people thought they couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. And then hearing about that from other people as well, that had a profound effect on me. So I wanted something from Bowie, but I also wanted something from the person he collaborated on this album with, Brian Eno, who is one of my favorite ambient musicians and producers of all time as well. So heroes is something good for me there. Furthermore, the reason I chose this is because it also makes me think of the Velvet Underground and the album The Velvet Underground and Nico. And there's a relationship between Lou Reed's the song Waiting for My Man and this song. So this song really ties together a lot of my favorite things about David Bowie, Lou Reed, Brian Eno, that set of musicians. I don't listen again to this album as much as I used to, but Bowie has always been an essential part of my musical history, but also in how I was able to think through my own subjectiveness and my own personhood and things like that. So I would not want to listen to anything else.
Fabulous. So as you were previously saying, you spent a good number of years in China. Do you have a favorite part of China?
A favorite part? I have several favorite places in China. Let's just, if there were any places that I would choose to live in China, firstly, Xi'an, which is the second city I lived in. I lived there for 2.5 years or so. Chengdu, which is the capital of Sichuan province, famous for its spicy food and pandas. But it's a really chilled, relaxed city with a good atmosphere. Third would be a city that I only visited to see friends, but a city called Xiamen, which is across the Taiwan Straits. So it's probably the closest city to Taiwan. And it has another, it's Amoy, where that sort of soy sauce is from, Amoy soy sauce that we might know. And it has a very relaxed vibe, an interesting hip hop scene. And then the other area would be somewhere in the province of Yunnan, which is a province that borders several other countries, including Myanmar. It's somewhere that I've got in trouble with border police for illegally crossing into Myanmar to go to a rebel state called the Wa state there to do a bit of research and see some friends. But there's a relaxed vibe there as well, partly because it's a multi-ethnic region. And
now, going on to your third song, can you tell me what it is and any reasons why?
So my third song is not my introduction to punk, but one of the first sort of songs that could be classified as punk that really resonated with me. It's a song by Against Me. It's called Baby, I'm an Anarchist. So I'll just briefly think of a few of the things about this song. We all know the British secondary school education system has a lot of weaknesses. I would say in philosophy, sociology, history, it's very selective about what knowledge you are given to learn and what you can think through critically. So for me as a 16-year-old growing up in North Devon, listening to American punk and English punk was one way for me to get a sociological and cultural and critical education. So along with, in this song, I basically was reading the lyrics and being like, what the hell is this? It's a song talking about class war. It's saying 36, what the hell is 36? Oh, the Spanish Civil War. It's talking about what happened in Seattle. What the hell happened in Seattle? I don't know what happened in Seattle. Where is Seattle? I don't even know where Seattle is. It mentioned Starbucks. I didn't know what a bloody Starbucks was at that time. Anarchist? Anarchism? What on earth is anarchism? And what is a liberal? It says things like this. It was, for me, a political and a sociological education in a 4-minute song. So for me, this is an amazing song, and it's a song is it amazing? Is it a work of musical genius? No, but it's an education, and I think music is about education.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, you did your postgrad at the LSE, also research assistant, and you did your PhD. So do you have any favorite places around the LSE?
Yeah, I mean, for my MSc in the anthropology department, I spent a lot of time sleeping in either on the beanbags in the library, but when I started my MSc, they were new, so they were actually clean. You might get some strange diseases from them nowadays. I'm not sure how often they are clean. And the second place was the, oh gosh, I've suddenly forgotten the name of the library on the sixth floor of the old building.
Shore Library.
The Shore Library. So I spent a lot of time snuggling down in seats there, having a nap, listening to music and podcasts and trying to figure out what the hell is anthropology, because I didn't really come in prepared to study anthropology, and I gave it a go. So those two places. As time went on, I spent a lot of time in the PhD Academy, but with my good friend Carl Truidson, who's also a PhD, who's also just finished his PhD, we spent a lot of time sitting in Lincoln Inn Fields on the benches at the tennis courts, looking at people playing tennis as two people who can't play tennis and commentating to each other about the tennis whilst we drink coffee. And for us, that was a perfect distraction from everything. We did decide that if we do finally become professors and have our own students at LSE, we will only allow them to have office hours with us on those benches, and we will only answer their questions through tennis metaphors. It's not something we've done yet, but it might be the future.
Perfect. And now moving on to your fourth song, can you tell me what it is and if there's any reasons why you're taking it?
Of course there are reasons. There are lots of reasons for all of my songs. So my fourth song is Patti Smith, and it's the song Piss Factory. So whilst I could listen to the album Horses forever, and I think that's a brilliant album, and I love hearing Patti Smith's voice, her poetry, her lyrics, the narrative of Piss Factory as somebody from Nowheresville who wants to make it in a big town. They say they're going to be a star in the future. They want to move on. That resonated with me. As a teenager, I worked in a local factory in Devon to make money and go get by, really. So the story in that manner resonates with me, as well as it being a really great song. It's powerful, beautifully written, and it really talks about the mundane violence of a working class life. We could get intersectional here and talk about everything. I'm not gonna ignore other forms of violence, but for me, that song really pushes through some of the violence of that people from the working class suffer, either from middle or upper class persons, or like within the working class and other people, but because violence is forced on people.
Your PhD thesis was called Life Under Chai: Spatial Governmentality and Practices of Resistance in the Digital and Physical Spaces of Beijing, China. First, can you tell me more about what it is you researched and what you found?
Yeah, sure. So my research was originally going to be a PhD looking at food communities. So food was going to be a big thing. Food workers, street vendors, informal restaurants, and migrant food. When I say migrant, I mean internal Chinese migration here. So migrant food communities in Beijing. and the role of food in staying in the place that someone has migrated to. Not necessarily assimilating or anything like that, but being part, managing to stay in that area and not being forced away, either because the city's trying to kick you out or you feel alone and distant. So that was the original idea. And I wanted to examine also the role of instant messaging and social media in those exchanges. But then every space of food, every food scape that I was doing research in was demolished by the government and local government. And that meant that the violence of the state and how space is the medium for violence for my interlocutors was impossible to ignore. Thus, I began to also examine how migrant food workers are controlled by the state and how they resist the state. Finally, in 2017 in Beijing, towards the end of the year, there was a fire that killed almost 20 people, most of them migrants. And that led to a spate of tens of thousands of people being evicted and displaced across Beijing. And I followed anti-eviction activism and took part in the anti-eviction activism that was going on there and helped as much as I could. And through that, I also researched sort of digital activism, political contestation online, and I think through how these things happen. And if anybody's interested in this, feel free to send me an email and I'll talk them through things if they want to know.
So now coming on to your fifth song, can you tell me what it is and any reasons why?
Yeah, so fifth song is The Mountain Goats, and it's the song This Year. So the album, I believe it's called The Tree Evergreen, is a concept album by The Mountain Goats, and it's about growing up in a shitty place with violent parents or a violent father-in-law, suffering abuse, alcohol abuse, and getting involved in drug abuse. The song, The Mountain Goats, are mostly the singer-songwriter John Daniel. And this song is very much about drug addiction and love and how you can go to some really dark places with both of those things. So I obviously, I think, and most people of my age may have taken some drugs in their time. I have taken some drugs in my time, but these narratives and this story of heroin addiction, it's one of the things that always reminds me of limitations, of what not to do, of scary places that I probably don't want to go. I put this song along with the film Requiem for a Dream, which is also about drug addiction, and the another film, Shame, I believe, which is about sex addiction. These films of addiction, sort of, they're the scariest films and songs for me. And they tell me what I could do if things don't go right. And they kind of help me self-discipline in a very Foucauldian way. Music helps me self-discipline, and that's probably a good thing.
So I've heard you have a menacing-looking cat called Dong. Can you tell me a little bit more about him?
Menacing? That's very rude. And Dong would feel insulted and slightly proud, I think. Yeah, my partner and I have a sphinx, which is a hairless cat. Well, he has a little bit of hair. He kind of, when you stroke him, he feels like velvet. He has been on a lot of Zoom chats with people over this pandemic period. And other people like Carl have come around to my house and stroked my Dong several times. And in conversations with some of the assistant and associate professors in the department. We've had a lot of conversations about Dong with a lot of laughs at the same time. Now, I will say my Dong means winter in Chinese. And his name is actually Dong Zhi, which is winter solstice. So whilst Dong does sound like we're saying Willy, I like the word Willy too. I don't use that word very often. It does sound like the word Willy. It has other meanings too. But the hilarity of talking about my Dong will never cease to amuse me.
So we're now moving on to your sixth song. Can you tell me what it is and the reasons why you're taking it with you?
So my sixth song is by the band Wanneng Qingnian Lubian, and in English they're called Omnipotent Youth Society, and it is called Shase Nige Shi Jia Zhuang Ren, Kill the One from Shi Jia Zhuang. So this is quite a beautiful song. The lyrics are very poetic. It's about how China is changing, but it's also about the hometown, this industrial town near Beijing that the band grew up in. It is definitely one of my favorite Chinese songs. For me, it's less about the words of the song, the lyrics per se, because there's a lot of great songs from the Chinese underground music scene. But it is more that it represents for me 2010 and 2011, which was the year where I was doing study abroad during my undergraduate in Beijing, where I was much more involved in the underground music scene in China than I have been since. And that was just a lot of people's favorite song from that period. So whenever I hear it, so many memories stream back, faces of friends who I'm struggling to see because of them living 12 hours flight away and other things as well, and censorship making it more difficult to interact regularly. So for me, this song brings back all these thoughts. I will say that because of censorship in China of music at the moment, I believe that song's been taken off Spotify. It used to be on Spotify. It's no longer there, but you can find it on YouTube.
My next question is, do you know what you're doing next now you've finished your PhD?
Yeah, so even in this awful job market, and I think it will get worse, but hopefully it doesn't, I managed to score a two-year research postdoc position at the University of Manchester. So near the end of September, I will be starting this research project where I will be exploring how surveillance is imagined due in the period during and after COVID-19. And I'll be doing that with two groups of people, Chinese students studying in the UK, and students enrolled in UK universities who have experience of living in China during the pandemic. So I imagine most of them will be students who are researching or studying Chinese as well. And I hope to understand how this pandemic has affected our understandings of surveillance for better or worse, and what this might mean for surveillance capitalism, authoritarianism, and other, or even the benefits of surveillance in the future.
We're now moving on to your seventh song. Can you tell me what it is and any reasons why you're taking it?
Yeah, so my seventh song is by Nils Fromm. It is called Four Peter Toilet Brushes More. So this album kind of reintroduced me to electronic music or synth-based music in a bigger way. I know it's not, it's very piano, synth, that sort of stuff, looping. I saw a live performance of this and I was like, this is mad. This is so good. And then I listened to the album. I loved it. It's about 15 minutes long. It is him doing almost all of the sounds, including playing a toilet brush during it. And it really inspired me to explore the burgeoning electronic music scene more. From there, I've listened to a lot of other stuff. I was listening to a lot of what we would define as post-punk before, which includes electronic music, guitar pedals, a lot of strange sounds. But I think Nils Frahm sort of eased my way into playing and listening to a much broader spectrum of electronic music. And this is one of the albums, the album is called Spaces, that I listened to most when I was writing my PhD.
So moving on to the last few questions now. Do you have a personality trait which you're most proud of or grateful for?
there's probably good answers to this and bad answers to this. My at times shamelessness is quite useful. I'm quite happy to shamelessly do things, although simultaneously, I often get quite shy and embarrassed by things as well. Often the things I've tended to notice, the things that other people are embarrassed by, I am very happy to do. Strip me off and I'll run along Oxford Circus without any hesitation. But some other stuff I probably wouldn't do, like more normal things I would find a bit scarier to do. So my shamelessness is one of my better personality traits, and it's very useful when you're doing ethnographic research like I have done, where you need to go and speak to people and you are put in uncomfortable situations. Other than that, I don't know. I generally think that it is better for people to tell me what they like about my personality or me as a person than for me to say what I think is good about myself. I'm generally quite critical of myself and who I am, but it's always nice to know what other people think are my good points.
And finally, what has been your favorite thing about being part of the LSE?
I'd say my favorite thing about being part of the LSE, somewhere between the community of, and again, sounds cliche, the community of researchers that I've met at LSE, both within the geography department, particularly the PhD cohort that I've spent time with, and the researchers of China at LSE. I co-run something called the China Reading Group at LSE. And through that, it's a cross-departmental interdisciplinary reading group. And through that, I've met most, I would imagine, of the China researchers at LSE. So meeting them has been amazing. And again, I've made some, I think, friends for life, including Hans Steinmüller and Andrea Pia in the anthropology department, and Andy Lee and Loretta Lowe and William Matthews. So I've made friends for life across the school.
Fabulous. And now moving on to your final song, can you tell me what it is and for any reasons why you'll be taking it with you?
So my final song is from probably my favorite album from 2018, although I mostly listened to it in 2019. It's Joy as an Act of Resistance by the band The Idols. And the song is I'm Scum. So The idols wear their politics on their sleeve. And I think they do it with amazing music, however you want to label that music. I would rather just label them. They are left. They are progressive. They are anti-racist. They are pro-migration. They are dealing with toxic masculinity. They are confronting it. They are calling for men to be more emotional, to be in touch with things, to cry, things like that. Their lyrics are smart. They are calling for solidarity. And they are able to deal with working class issues, which are important to a lot of us, without going into working class are racist, Brexiteers are racist, it's all racism, stupid. Like, they don't do that, and that is really important. So for me, this band has given a voice to progressive left-wing ideas in the working class, which I think has been absent. And malignant organizations like the Footy Lads Alliance and people like that, maybe we're going to get brigaded by them. But malignant organizations like that that are Islamophobic and racist have monopolized the conversation of what being working class and British is. And that sickens me. And I think the idols' music does something to push back against that. And I think that's really important. And I think the LSE needs to do more of that as well. And that's why I will always try my best to help any students of mine or not of mine who are from a, let's say, minority background at the LSE, to do what they can, because it's important to have those voices. They also have some good lyrics, just as I finished, such as this snowflake's an avalanche, and they holler loudly through one of the songs, I kissed a boy and I liked it. And they play around with a notion of who is scum. I would say that whenever I listen to this song, I think that I don't necessarily think I am scum, but it makes me remember who I consider to be scum, who are not the traditional scum, and that to some people, they see me and they think I am scum. So it helps me position myself.
Brilliant. And now moving on to the final section. So guests are allowed to take with them the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of their choice. So, however, I know you've requested to swap out the religious text for a philosophical text of choice. So if we start there, can you tell me about the philosophical text you'll be taking with you?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually gone light on this. There's a few things that I think I could have taken, but if I could say the works of Simone de Beauvoir, but I'm mostly, if I was taking a nice political, philosophical text with me, it would be the book All Men Are Mortal. I think that sitting alone on a desert island with a book that reflects on the idea of immortality and the folly of immortality will be quite good. And it's probably the first book I read that could be considered philosophy. I read it alongside The Glass Bead Game, which completely went over my head. And I loved it. And it made me feel that philosophical texts could be accessible. The book I chose is Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. So whilst with the philosophical text, I was reflecting on immortality, Infinite Jest is a bloody long book, and I feel I would need to be marooned on a desert island for 100 years to be able to finish that book. I've attempted it numerous times and not got very far. So hopefully I'll be able to do that on the island. finally, my inanimate object, material object, other thing, will be a set of teenage engineering synthesizers and musical equipment, such as the OP-1, the OPZ, and a few pocket operators, with some sort of solar-powered charging equipment alongside so I can continue to use them. I mentioned Nils Fram as my musical choice, and he got me into contemporary sampling and electronic music in different ways. So I would like to continue to do that whilst I'm on the island and create some truly awful sounds.
Well, brilliant. Thank you, Carwin, for telling me about your Geography Island jams.
Thank you, Will, for having me. I enjoyed teaching you when I did teach you in the past. I have loved everything you've done in the few years that I've known you, including creating an inclusive environment and a environment of positivity for the students. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for organizing this podcast.